Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for another fun and fur-filled hour of Fervently Speaking, hosted by pet lifestyle and industry expert, top dog Eileen Proctor. Nationally renowned as America's Canine Connections Coach, the top dog has a knack of sniffing out and sharing information about products, services, activities, and news that improve the quality of life for pets and the people who love them, all in an inimitably entertaining style. Whether it's dogs, cats, critters, you name it, the top dog has really got her paws on the pulse of America's pet-loving society. It's time to sit, stay, and pick up your ears for Fervently Speaking, and your host, top dog, Eileen Proctor.
And whoop, welcome to everybody, all you pet lovers and pets out there. I don't care if you have two legs or four, you've come to the right place, because Fervently Speaking, if it's about fur, we are all over it. And if you could see my clothes, you would know it is all over me as well. I am your host, the top dog, Eileen Proctor, known as the Canine Connections Coach across the country and also the voice of pet rescue because of my very fervent rally cry, adoption is the best option. So whatever kind of critter you've got in your life, or critters, plural, because most of us, we've got so many of them, I'm glad you're here with us today. It is Hump Day, my favorite day of the week, and of course, the second and fourth Fridays of the month is when Fervently Speaking comes to you live on the Boomer and the Babe channel of Blog Talk Radio. So sit on down. We're going to have a fun and fur-filled hour. And today's topic is something that I know is going to be of interest to you because we are having changes of season coming soon. I know it's unseasonably warm in a lot of sections of the country right now. And we are going to be seeing a lot of changes in our pets' coat, their behavior, but their coat, their skin, all sorts of things. So I thought today that we would talk about the do's and don'ts of pet grooming, whether you do that at home or professionally. And we're gonna hear from a bonafide expert. Her name is Laura Russell. Laura is a certified master groomer and the lead groomer at Villa La Paz Spa on Bell Road in Phoenix, Arizona. She has been grooming in the valley for over 36 years, which is really difficult to believe because she doesn't look like she's that much older than that. Obviously, working with dogs does work for her. She's lived in Arizona most of her life, and I asked her before we started, what's your specialty? And she says, difficult dogs. I work with difficult dogs, so I'll let her speak for herself. Everybody, I want to welcome to Fervently Speaking, Laura Russell. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Eileen. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I am so glad to have you here because I know that grooming is the bugaboo to a lot of pet owners, and we're going to talk about a lot of different things that are going to help us be able to enjoy our pets more and not have all the issues that we've had in the past because you are going to shed light. You're going to shed light, thank you, onto the grooming aspect. And I guess my first question, too, is the difference between home grooming versus professional grooming. Why do people go to professional groomers?
Well, home grooming can be very messy. It can be very time-consuming. It's like, why would you build your house yourself versus having a carpenter come in? It's having the tools, it's having the equipment, and it's having the knowledge to put it all together.
That's a really good point. That really is a good point. And I know that professionals can do certain things because they're trained and they can do things better, but their equipment is a major part of that. And when I said you were going to shed light, actually I said shed life, but I meant shed light, on the topic, shedding is a major issue. And I know that professional groomers tend to have some kind of magic ways of helping with the shedding issue. For those of you listening, hang in there. We're going to get to that topic, all right?
Okay.
So let's talk about every one of the things. I've got so many questions. You know that I've got a number of different dogs, and most of mine have got long hair. They're the ones that shed all the time and need baths and trimming all the time. But you particularly, you have a penchant for pugs, don't you?
I have a real passion for pugs.
And what is that all about, by the way?
Oh, they're just snorty, funny little creatures that have really stolen my heart.
Yeah, you have many of them in your life, don't you?
I own 9 of them myself. I also own a standard poodle. I have to have one token long-nosed dog.
Long-nosed and long hair.
Long-nosed and long hair.
Right, okay. And by the way, you said that you own them, but I've seen this interaction. I think they own you.
They definitely own me.
Yeah, yeah. So do you want to say hello to all of your pugs? We'll start with the poodle because, again, what's the poodle's name?
The poodle's name is Cookie.
Okay, hi, Cookie. We're saying hello to you from the recording studios here of Fervently Speaking. And now let's list the pugs. I'll count on my fingers.
Mooch, Muggle, Louie, Gidget, Ferris, Maverick.
3 more.
You've got me.
Uh-oh.
Jack.
2 more. She's saving the best for last, you guys. Don't feel bad. All right, well, if you think of them later, write them down. And
I do. I make lists.
Right.
So I know who I have.
Right.
Yes.
Now, you also have pugs and poodles. Do you only do pea breeds in your house?
No, I actually foster for an all-breed rescue. So I have a lot of little chihuahuas and pug mixes and various other assorted breeds of currently an Australian cattle dog.
Oh, my goodness. So when we own a house, we're not thinking of Laura's house.
Right, it's wild and crazy.
All right, wild and crazy. All right, well, you have the ability to be able to work with difficult dogs, and I know what I want to talk about, because it's something for every dog, is about toenail trims, and pugs are notorious for not liking toenail trims, true or not?
Oh, they are absolutely the worst.
Is it a gene that they have? What do you think
I think
that?
It's a gene. They turn on a switch at about a year of age and say, I absolutely hate this.
Yeah, I mean, I hear it sounds like you're actually like branding them with a hot poker iron when you're doing the toenails for pugs. Are there other breeds that tend to have a similar disinterest in removing the click clack of little claws?
Like having their feet touched.
Oh.
It's one of those things. So very few dogs really love having their toenails trimmed. Sometimes they do better than others. Some dogs do better than others. It's not a breed thing. It's just a dog thing.
It's a dog thing. Okay. So when you mention difficult dogs, I think of pug nails. Let's talk about toenail trims. Why is it, besides the noise factor, and, you know, people say, I have carpeting, it doesn't matter to me, but besides the noise factor, why is it important to make sure that your dog's toenails are trimmed?
Well, if you have carpeting with the long nails, they can definitely catch in the carpeting and tear and rip off. And then it's a very painful, possibly infected area that you have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
They also will grow clear around, and they'll go into the pad on the other side of the foot.
Oh, I've seen that. It's like they loop around.
They loop around. Just like your nails actually grow in a curved fashion, so does dogs. And if they're not worn down or ground down or cut down, sometimes they will loop and come completely back around, especially those little side claws that dogs have called dew claws.
The dew claws, yeah, yeah. And so understanding everything you just said, there's also something that has to do with their posture and the way they walk, because if they're too long, they're walking on their tiptoes.
Well, yes, because it'd be like if you let your toenails just grow forever, and they would start to curve around, and then you would be walking back on your heels because your pads of your foot couldn't hit the ground. It's the same thing with dog toenails.
Yeah, except they're much harder and thicker, and so it'll happen much faster.
It happens faster, and it does a lot of breakage of the bone structure and can cause permanent damage to the dog's foot, cause a lot of arthritis and problems later on in life.
Yeah, so it's not just about the nails, it's about the whole body experience.
It's about the whole body experience.
So you mentioned if they're not ground down or filed down, there's a few different ways to be able to get the toenails shorter. Why don't we talk about that? So the dogs that run around on concrete, is that good enough?
No, because if the nail actually hits the concrete, it's too long to start with. What you want to do is keep it from ever making that clicky-clack sound anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a myth. A lot of groomers used to say, well, if the nails are sharp, go out and run it on the concrete. So Some dogs will run forward on their nails and wear their nails down.
Right.
Some dogs dig and wear their nails down. But I find more runners wear their back nails down, more diggers wear their front nails down.
Oh, interesting. And the whole concept with the concrete is it's kind of like an emery board, but it's just taken off like the very, very front. It's not really going to do that much.
It's taken off the very front, and your dog actually has to lean their nails forward to hit the ground.
Okay. So if you're looking at a dog's paw and you're looking at the nails, is there a rule for how long it should be, or just when you hear the click-clack, it's time?
I tell people the click-clack is the best indicator that it's time for the nails to be done.
Okay. Now, what are some of the ways that people at home, if they're so brave, and by the way, you have to be brave because this is what I have found. I know how to clip dog nails. I know how to do it, but my dogs have me wrapped around their paws, and they know what to do to get me to not touch their paws or to not use the nail clipper, and so I always go to a professional for this because I don't want to be the bad guy. But if we're so inclined, or you as a professional groomer, what do you use to bring the toenails down to the right length?
Really, it depends on the dog. I know a lot of people prefer the newer way of doing it, which is grinding, and it's very popular right now.
That's like with the Dremel tool.
With a Dremel tool or the Petit Paw or any of the rotary type emery board.
Right.
I have dogs, though, that will not handle the grinding and do much better with just a plain old-fashioned toenail clipper.
And, okay, so going back to the grinder for a second, I would think the noise is a little bit upsetting to them, but also the feel of that grinder. I know when I get my nails done, and I do, yes, I do, I don't go to a groomer, but when I get my nails done, if they use the Dremel on my nails, it can create extra heat, and it just makes me jump. And once I've jumped once, now I'm really cautious. So I'm not a big fan of the vroom.
The Dremels do generate a lot of heat. That's I have a lot of people who have come into the salon and say, oh, I want them ground and ground only. But I always tell people, let your professional pick the right method. If the nails are really long, it's better off to just clip them first and then grind or sand the edges or file the edges.
Gotcha. And there's a couple of different types of nail clippers out there, right?
So there's a lot of different kinds. It's finding a kind that you are comfortable with. If you have little tiny dog toenails, like a little chihuahua or something like that, you might be better off with a small dog toenail clipper. But I have had some dogs with huge, thick tree trunk nails, and then you have to get the heavy-duty type nail clippers to get through those.
Yeah, there's some of them that look like guillotines almost, right?
There's guillotine, scissor type. I used to use guillotine. Now I prefer scissor type because I can see a little better with scissoring.
Gotcha. And then the other thing about toenails that stops a lot of people from clipping them is the toenails bleed. And so I know that there is the quick, which is actually a vein that runs through there. So two things. One, how do you find the quick so that you're not causing your dog to bleed? That's part A. Go ahead.
Okay. The toenail grows in a natural curve. Unfortunately, the longer you let the toenails get, the longer the quick will get, the blood supply will get. Sometimes you have to find it by trial and error, and you end up catching the quick a little bit. I always tell people to go to about the center of the curve. Where you see the toenail bending, go to about the center and cut it straight off right there.
Okay. And if you do that, does the quick recede into the nail so the next time you can go a little bit shorter without fear?
It definitely recedes. If you do the toenails every week and just cut a little off the end every week, you'll get them back to a nice short length in a couple months.
Cool. And then now, of course, this is what everybody wants to know. What happens if I accidentally cut my dog's quick when I am trimming back his nails? Is he going to bleed to death? How do I stop the bleeding?
It will scare the heck out of you because it looks like a lot of blood.
Mm-hmm.
It usually will stop on its own, but if most people want to stop it immediately. If you're at home, you have no emergency supply, sometimes just flour works really well. You take a pinch and pack it in. Another favorite home trick of mine is to take a hard bar of soap, stick the nail down in the soap.
Oh.
And the soap will set up a clot for you.
That doesn't work with body wash.
Liquids don't work.
No, that doesn't work. Okay. So if you do cut the quick, the mess is one thing you want to do, but again, take some flour or take a bar of soap and you can get it to stop. Is the dog in pain when?
The dog usually is not in pain. The nerve, which is the actual painful part of the nail, is further back.
Okay. All right. So we want to stop the bleeding for the mess. We want to stop it because we feel bad that we see it. It'll probably stop on its own, but those are two ways of doing it. And what's the professional product? If somebody did want to go out and buy it, what's it called?
I do recommend people have it. It's a stiptic-type powder called Quick Stop.
Quick Stop.
It has a little, there's numerous brands of Quick Stop, mm-hmm. but it's all stiptic powder for the nails. And I recommend that you have that on hand if you are going to cut nails. It's very quick, has a little bit of benzocaine in it to stop any kind of pain at all.
Oh, nice.
And it works very well. Again, take a pinch and press it into the end of the nail.
Cool. And that is something we could buy at most pet supply stores?
Most pet supply stores carry it right with the toenails.
Cool. That's excellent. That is probably more information than anybody thought that they needed to know or would know about trimming toenails. But it's a very important aspect of grooming that people take for granted. And ditto on that is the whole concept of toothbrushing. Because that's you know, the other end. You got the bottom and you got the top now. And toothbrushing is something that is increasingly becoming important in the grooming regimen. And why is that?
Well, just like your teeth, you can't go once a year to a dentist and expect to have good teeth. You have to have maintenance. And I really strongly urge every parent to learn to brush their dog's teeth at home and to do it regularly, ideally every 48 hours. If once a week, whatever you can do works really great. It's a simple procedure, it's a low-cost procedure, and it's really highly recommended.
So what, can we just use a regular human toothbrush and regular human toothpaste?
No, not regular human toothpaste because it is too sugary for a dog's mouth.
Oh.
And plus, a lot of dogs don't like the flavor of human toothpaste.
I don't like the flavor of some, that stuff is just baking soda.
Well, they do make really nice dog toothpaste. It's less sugar. You can get mint flavored. I like it because it smells good afterwards, but you can also get peanut butter and beef and other flavors that your dog might like better.
Okay, and that's kind of a trial or error type thing?
It's a trial or error.
Is it a special doggy toothbrush?
No. Any toothbrush works fine. I recommend a medium bristle on down. They do make toothbrushes for dogs. They're a lot easier to use. It's a rubber tip that goes over your own finger. You put the toothpaste on, and you just use your finger.
Oh, that's like the finger cop thing. It's got little nibbies on it.
It's got little nibbies, and it works great.
Yeah, you know, it kind of looks like the things that we used to use back in my day, like to like go through papers, you know, like one of those things.
Exactly.
Is that like what it is?
It's exactly. It's
yeah.
A little rubber tip. You can wash it off with soap and water afterwards and
right.
Reuse it.
So the whole concept of toothbrushing, it's yes, aesthetic, that you want your dog's teeth to look nice, and yes, it's the breath, because people like me who like to make out with their dogs, yes, it's true, everybody, by now you should know it's true. I'd rather kiss a dog in the mouth than, well, just about anything, but there are other reasons for brushing the teeth, and a lot of it has to do with the gums.
It stays off. Periodontal disease.
Periodontal disease, yeah.
It keeps costs down as far as having teeth cleaned. There's just so many reasons. Dogs don't feel that it's much harder on the inside of their teeth, so mainly you have to worry about the outside of the teeth and primarily the teeth in the back of the mouth.
Right.
You don't necessarily have to even open the mouth very wide. Just move their lip and stick your finger brush in and scrub around on the back.
Mm-hmm. That's a good idea. And you know, I was just thinking, you were talking about with toenail trims, a lot of dogs don't like their feet touched, and dogs won't just instantly gravitate to toothbrushing. It's probably a matter of desensitizing them to this by starting at an early age, by touching their paws a lot when you're not trimming the nails, or touching their mouths when you're not doing the toothbrushing.
Right,
yes.
Right. Very good.
Yeah,
I do a lot of that with my pets early on, just stick my finger in their mouth when I'm playing with them, not with their mouth open and biting.
Right, of course.
Holding their, you know, getting them used to being held around the mouth works really well, too. Same thing with the feet. A lot of playing, a lot of fingers up in it, a lot of playing, just, you know, wiggling their toenails and moving their feet around.
Gotcha. Okay, so toothbrushing is also very important, and it's an overlooked aspect of grooming, and a lot of people can do that at home even if they do get their dog professionally groomed. That's not a painful, hard, equipment-intensive thing to do.
It's a really simple procedure, and I brush teeth in the salon, but really it's not enough. You need to be doing it at home. Dental care at the vet is very expensive by virtue that they have to anesthetize your dog to have it done.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have a dog that doesn't handle anesthesia well, there's always problems with that. The more you can do at home, the better. I know the trend is going to non-anesthetic teeth cleaning, And some states do allow it, some states still don't. That's a nice option, but still every once in a while you're going to have the teeth scaled professionally at the vet, going up under the gum lines, removing any teeth that have gotten bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we discussed that on a previous episode of Fervently Speaking, the whole concept of making sure that your dog's teeth are properly cleaned because of all the different things. The periodontal disease is one thing, but the germs can cause other issues. And so, we also talked about the non-anesthetic teeth cleaning, and unfortunately, that's not really licensed. Anybody basically can do it. They can put out a shingle and say,
right,
I'm going to scrape your dog's teeth. Well, if they do go and nick the gums and the dog starts to bleed and the germs get into their system, not good. So I personally have not done that, had that done, I should say, for any of my pets. I like to go to brush the teeth at home, and then when I get my professional groom, which I do also do, they brush the teeth as well because they can get away with more, just like with mm-hmm. toenail trimmings. And then, yes, getting the dog's teeth cleaned. I know that they say once a year. I usually do it once every 2 years, depending upon the age of my dogs.
Right.
So, yeah. Okay, good.
Good question.
Yep. Okay, I'm going to bring up something about grooming, that why a lot of people go to the professional groomer versus doing things at home. This was probably the thing that made me not become a professional groomer earlier in my life, and that is, okay, everybody, I'm going to say it, anal glands.
Yeah, they're yucky.
Anal glands, yeah. Now, a lot of people don't even know what that's all about, so could you explain anal glands?
Anal glands are two little sacs located on either side of the inside of the rectum, and what they are for is an old throwback to leaving odor behind so other dogs know that they've been there.
Oh, okay.
Originally, anal glands were self-expressed by the dog every time they went number two, pooped.
Okay.
Unfortunately, a lot of people don't like picking up big wads of dog poop, so fiber has been left out of most of our dog food, and it's become much leaner in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
And so dogs don't have big poop, and so without big poop, the anal glands just don't get expressed.
Gotcha. Now, what's the importance? I know the original thing was about leaving a scent, but why do anal glands need to be expressed?
If they aren't expressed, you can have a whole host of problems, running from cancer to impaction, and when they become impacted, they can blow out and become an abscess.
Mm-hmm.
Right by the rectum, very dangerous area to have an abscess,
right,
to needing professional removal, and it's a very tough surgery for dogs.
Wow. So a lot of people that do home grooming, their dog looks pretty and smells pretty and all that, but most people at home are not well-versed in knowing that they should or even knowing how to do anal glands. And I have to be honest, I don't want to spend the time instructing people how to do it. If you're interested in doing that, there's ways you can find out online.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a hard process to do is my question.
It's a very simple process to do, and there's a lot of great tutorials out there online.
Okay.
But if your dog signs of anal gland irritation, if your dog's scooting,
uh-huh,
licking their rear end a lot.
Right.
I have one dog who has very leaky anal glands, and so she'll walk by and kind of poof, as we call it. The fluid is very foul, smells really bad.
Mm-hmm.
To get it out of furniture, off you, or off anything, you can use rubbing alcohol.
Oh.
And it'll take the odor right out, or hand sanitizer with alcohol in it.
You heard it here first, folks. A very good way to remove the smell of anal glands is rubbing alcohol or hand sanitizer.
And most groomers express from the outside of the dog. I personally draw the line of going up inside a dog's cavity to do much.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that's a vet's job.
So if your dog really is showing, I was going to say expressing issues, but that's not what I meant. If your dog is showing issues that he's constantly scooting, biting at himself, really having a hard time, and you've brought him to the groomer and they've expressed the anal glands and they're still having a problem, seek professional, needs to go to the vet. Are there particular breeds of dogs that have more issues with anal glands than others?
Usually more small dogs.
The small dogs do.
Yeah. Smaller breeds tend to have more anal gland issues. They tend to be more on canned foods and
okay,
on foods that are low in fiber.
Okay, smaller poops, smaller.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, all right. So anal glands is another aspect of grooming that people, it's one of those things you don't like to talk about, but you know that it has to be done now, you do anyway. And so even if you are home doing home grooming, you may want to bring your dog in. Will a groomer, if you bring a dog in, just express anal glands for you just like that?
Most groomers will.
Oh.
3-4 minutes.
Okay, gotcha. All right. So there you go, guys. Just think about that. Watch your dog, and if he's scooting across the rug or the floor or the deck outside, you may want to go visit your groomer or your vet. Thank you for doing that delicately, Laura.
Thank you.
After all those years of grooming. All right, so we're talking about bathing your dog, and we are here with certified master groomer Laura Russell. She's the lead groomer at Villa La Paz Spa on Bell Road in Phoenix, Arizona. 36 years of grooming, and baths is probably something that a lot of people try to attempt at home. And we're talking about the right type of shampoo. We have many different types. Let's just review them. You talk. Tell me about a few of the different types of shampoos.
Well, there's hypoallergenic. If your dog tends to have skin issues, then you want to look at a hypoallergenic shampoo.
So allergies or itchiness or something
allergies
like that.
Allergies or itchiness. It's generally soap and perfume-free shampoo or light in the soap and perfume department.
Okay, good.
There's texturizing shampoos for the dogs that need haircuts. There's
conditioning shampoos
for the longer hair dogs. There's also a whole host of medicated shampoos.
Mm-hmm.
Usually those have to be obtained from a vet. And really, if your dog is having real skin issues, a lot of itchiness, probably should check with your vet first and mm-hmm. see what they recommend. You can buy oatmeal-type products over the counter, but then I have found dogs allergic to oatmeal.
Really?
In the shampoo.
Oh, that's new.
And have a lot of problems with it.
So I wonder if dogs that are allergic to oatmeal shampoo are also allergic to the oatmeal that's now in their foods, which was actually used as an anti-allergen.
Yeah. You do see that. That's why you see a lot of your foods that are allergy-free shampoos or allergy-free foods
uh-huh.
are generally, you know, two ingredients. Example,
yeah.
fish and potato
yes.
and nothing else.
Yeah, yeah, that's interesting. Wow, it's amazing how allergies are affecting us. Okay, so you want to make sure that you have the right type of shampoo. It's got to be a pet-oriented, correct, for the species we're talking about, and find the right type of shampoo. So what do? You wet the dog down first.
I recommend you wet the dog down first, but the most important part of bathing your dog at home is to brush it completely out before you ever get your dog wet.
That is a great tip. Okay, now why is that the case?
Most dogs have what's called a double coat. They have an undercoat, which is generally what they shed,
mm-hmm.
and then they have an outer coat. Like a wool sweater, when the two coats get wet, sometimes they will kind of shrink up and mesh together. And so you want to have all the tangles out because the tangles will be set by the water and become next to impossible to remove.
So when the groomer says to me, my dog is packed, that's what's basically happened, right, is all those
it's
little
knotty
things.
It's starting to mesh up together.
Wow. Oh, and that does hurt the dog, by the way.
It starts to pull the skin. Goes on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so brush out your dog first, long hair and short hair. Brush him out first. That would get out any additional coat that's just hanging out there.
It's a good practice. It takes out big pieces of dirt.
Gotcha. Good.
Gets the dog prepped for the bath.
Okay, so brush out your dog first,
mm-hmm.
and then what's the temperature of water? I like my water very hot, but how do you know, if it's safe for your doggy?
A dog's skin is better with the water on the coolish side. Again, the hot water dries them out.
Oh.
And in fact, dogs with severe allergies, usually the vet recommends cold water for baths.
So those times I crawl into the walk-in shower with my dog to shampoo her and I've got it nice and warm for her, I'm really doing her a disservice.
You're doing a disservice. I like it lukewarm.
Okay, so lukewarm. And then we wet them. Is there an order, like tail to head to tail?
I like to wet from the head back. It makes sense. You hold the head up. You wet it. It's okay to let some water run into the eyes. You just don't really want it running into the nose.
Okay, not into the nose. And how about the ears?
Ears I tend to kind of hold shut with my hands.
Mm-hmm.
You can use cotton balls
okay. And
put cotton balls in the ears first, but the cotton balls may get really wet and then water will start dripping beyond the cotton balls.
Okay, so basically hold your fingers against where the opening of the dog's ears is to try not to get it in there. Is there a danger of getting water in the dog's nose or ear?
Well, the nose can cause a lot of sneezing, can be inhaled. That's not a good thing.
Okay.
On the ears, yes, it can sit there in the ear canal, and then it will form a breeding ground for infection.
Oh.
So you really don't want to run water down either one.
Okay. All right. And we're not pounding the dog. We're just wetting down the dog.
You wet the dog down. Some coats are harder to get wet. Labradors come to mind because they do have a natural oil in their coat that helps them repel the water and help them become better in the water.
Right, right, exactly, when they're retrieving and all that. Yeah, yeah. So you got to know your breed as well. There you go. Okay, so now your dog is brushed out, wet down from the head down toward the tail, and now we're applying the shampoo?
Well, what you might want to do is dilute the shampoo in a secondary bottle.
Dilute the shampoo.
Dilute it. Some shampoos come with dilution. If not, I recommend that maybe do a third shampoo, two-thirds water, shake it up, and then apply that. One, it goes on better.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have thick lots of shampoo to rinse out later.
Yeah, right.
And so dilute the shampoo a little bit and then put the shampoo on the dog. I recommend, again, from about what the brow bone would be back. Keep the head upright while you're applying it along the head, and then make sure you rub and scrub and massage it into everything you can on the dog. Pay attention for between the toes. Yes, we're back to the rear end. Wash the rear end really good.
That's when you would do the anal glands?
I do the anal glands when I'm wetting, right before I wet the dog down.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then I rinse everything away and then start shampooing the dog.
Okay, good. And then the shampoo would probably take it any of the smell just in case any of...
Yes, it does.
Okay, yeah, okay.
And then I would, on the last thing, people get nervous about shampooing around the face or eyes.
Right.
If you're nervous, put it on a washcloth.
Ah.
And then apply shampoo around the face and eyes. You do need to get the mouth area in particular clean. If your dog has little gunkies around the eyes, you really kind of need to shampoo those out.
So the shampoo getting in the eyes, though, does that hurt them?
What I do is the face very last, and then I start rinsing immediately.
Okay. All right,
And then I rinse from the eye area backwards.
Okay. And so when you rinse, you know you're finished when you're scrubbing on your dog with your hands, nothing gets all foamy again? Is there a trick to that?
Nothing gets all foamy, and just like a human, you can make sure the hair is squeaky clean.
Okay, good. I'm done with the bath. I'm walking out of the shower with my dog. It invariably shakes itself all over the place, so I have to wash the walls later.
Right,
okay.
Prepared.
I'm prepared for that. I have towels all over the floor. She starts to rub herself all over the carpeting. Is there a trick to drying the dog?
I use a towel and just towel dry and rub, 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 rub.
Okay.
And then afterwards, you might want to take your home hair dryer on a cool setting and brush your dog while you're drying your dog.
Okay.
Again, you need to brush the dog out after it's dry.
Okay, so brush before and after. Gotcha.
And then I just use a towel. I rub some and squeeze more than rub even.
Okay.
And make sure everything's dry. Again, the feet, if you don't get the feet dry, you're going to end up having muddy paws and defeat the purposes.
Yeah, or get like a fungus in between the toes.
Or get a fungus in between the toes because it takes so long to dry out in some climates.
Good. All right. Is there anything else about the actual bathing and drying process that you said cool on the hair dryer? I don't use a hair dryer on mine when I do it at home because by then they've had enough, but it's cool. I imagine don't blow it into their ear duct or into their eyeball socket.
Don't blow the ears or eyes.
Okay.
Blow into the ears or eyes. Especially in climates with humidity. We don't have much in Arizona, so you could actually have them outside for 15 minutes and they'd be dry in the summer. But in humid climates, you're really going to have to work at getting the dog dry.
Okay, all right. And getting the dog absolutely dry, is that important more for us so that they don't smell, start to smell or anything, or is it important to get the dog dry afterwards for another reason?
It's important to get it for other reasons. Primarily, they can eventually develop a yeast infection in the skin. We see that a lot in Arizona with swimming pool dogs.
Got it.
That wear a collar, they end up getting yeast infections under the collar line.
Yeah.
Kind of very nasty smelling.
Yeah.
They smell like old socks all the time.
Yeah, which, by the way, is a warning for you before when you're brushing your dog out. You may have to have the collar on the dog to hold the dog in place, but take off the collar or any other clothing the dog may have when you go into the bath.
Yeah, I've got one trick to hold your dog still is take the collar, put the leash and collar on, and then loop it under a table leg.
Oh.
And it holds your dog in one place, more or less.
That's when you're brushing.
When you're brushing.
Yeah, I don't have
preparing or drying.
I don't have a table in my shower.
But if your dog's trying to escape while you're brushing, and is go ahead and leash it up to a table.
Got it.
Dirty object.
Great. That is a great idea. Cool. The whole reason why a lot of people bathe their dogs is because of the smell aspect of it. And the other is they like them to look fluffy. But a big part of that is they think if their dog is shedding, and I promised you at the beginning of the show we'd be talking about shedding, if they're shedding, they think a bath is going to be the solution to that. So let's talk about shedding. Number one, why do dogs shed?
Because they have coat. We shed too. You see the hair in your hairbrush. You see the hair in the shower. Everything with fur or hair is going to shed coat because the coat dies, drops out, and you get new coat in. Dogs just shed more profuse hair, and so it becomes a real problem. Plus, they tend to shed seasonally.
Yeah, that's what I find is my dogs are, especially my golden retriever, you know, we get little, you know, I don't call them dust bunnies, I call them dust puppies all around the house. And I mean, I just wish that I could, you know, raise them as my own. But it's all shedding from the dog. It's not in strands anymore. It's in tufts.
That's the undercoat coming out. It's a soft, fluffy coat that helps protect them both from the heat and from the cold. And so people in Arizona are very surprised when you see a dog pack on undercoat even in the summer. It's a different kind of undercoat, but it's a sheddable.
So it's an insulation-y thing.
It's an insulation thing.
Yeah, okay. But during the a season like now, because we're going to be going from the cold into the temperate, depending upon where we are in the country, or into the warm if we're in Arizona, so this would be a time when they are shedding a lot?
They're starting to shed a lot. The seasons and the sun have told them to shed, and so it's time for their coats to start dropping from the winter.
Okay, so let's talk about what we can do during these shedding times to minimize the look and just annoyance of the shedding. What can we do?
Well, I am going to plug a tool. The best tool for a medium to short-haired dog that sheds is called a Furminator de-shed tool.
Furminator.
And there are knockoffs now of the Furminator, but it is a shedding tool. To most owners, it seems very expensive. It's the best dollars you will spend ever on your dog. It takes out undercoat very nicely with just basically a raking through the dog.
Is it for long hair and short hair dogs?
Mostly medium to short.
Okay.
If you have a curly or wiry coat or a really long coat, no.
Okay. So the Furminator shedding tool, I've seen those. It looks scary to use. It looks like a heavy-duty blade. Would I, as a regular homeowner, hurt my dog by using it?
If you use it too much or too hard, yes. But if you're just raking, following the package instructions, just raking it through the coat, you'll just see handfuls of hair come up.
So I would do that throughout the whole year. I mean, it doesn't have to be just during shedding season.
Do it daily. And it would help keep the hair under control.
Yeah, I guess if you did it nicely, it almost looks like a good massage, like scratching his back.
They get used to it.
Yeah?
And most dogs really do like it.
Okay, so using the Furminator tool, is regular brushing or combing going to help?
Regular brushing helps a lot, especially for the long-coated dogs. Also, the dogs that traditionally don't shed, like poodles and terriers, still need to be brushed daily because they don't shed, they will mat up. Their coat still is shedding out. It just is retained better by the dog. And so you've got to brush those. Anything that you have to brush regularly that might mat, I recommend following with a nice combing with a steel tooth comb. Most people tend to brush the outside of the hair, but they don't get down to the skin.
Ah, and that's probably where all the shedding is coming from.
And that's
from
where
anyway.
All the shedding's coming from, and that's where they mat up.
Gotcha. Because you know what they say, shed happens, huh?
Yeah, it does.
So let's talk about shedding from this perspective. I do brush my pets frequently. Okay, I'm lying. I brush my pets every once in a while, but I do, and I get a lot of hair out, but they still seem to shed a lot. But when they go to the groomer, it seems like they don't shed for a while after that. What magic are you using? Is it just the Furminator shedding tool, or is it special shampoos or other equipment that you're using?
Sometimes it's special shampoos to help loosen up the coat. Water always loosens the coat a little bit. Really, the magic trick that most groomers will use is called a high-velocity dryer. Really noisy one.
Yeah, everybody
is afraid of and say, I don't want that used on my dog. It is standard in the industry to use the high-velocity dryer. And what they do is cause a cycle of air to go down to the skin. It picks up the hair and blows it right out of the dog.
So any hair that's, like, stubborn and hanging in there, it's going to blow it out.
It blows it out without tugging, without pulling, without hurting the dog.
Right. Makes the dog fluffier, too.
It makes the dog very fluffy. And it most dogs, when they get used to it, do well. I know we've always caught ears to make it easier for the dog to handle the noise.
Right.
But I've had deaf dogs that don't like it because of the feel of the air on the skin.
Yeah.
So it's not always the noise. A lot of times it is just the feel of the air.
Yeah, I think it looks really cool. I've seen that. I've seen that in a lot of cases. And it's kind of like when you go through a car wash and you go through the last part and the dryer is forcing the beads of water up on the windshield. That's kind of like what it looks like in a dog.
Well, it snows in July in Arizona with that. Yeah. It blows a lot of hair out, and that is the very best tool to get hair out. And the dryers are very costly, very messy to use at home.
Right.
So as a rule, you know, it's a grooming shop item.
Yeah, and also if you don't really know how you're using it, you can actually cause problems because if the air is too forceful, you could, if it hits the eye, you could probably hurt the eye or the
dry out or hurt the eye,
and
the ear.
Okay, so if your dog really sheds a lot, a professional shedding, a professional groomer might be a really good answer, but if nothing else, the Furminator shedding tool, Laura Russell, certified master groomer, she's swearing by it. So
it's the best tool I've seen on the market.
And you don't get any money if people buy it.
And I don't get any money, but I'll tell you, I use it on 90% of the dogs that I groom at work.
Gotcha. And you know, just by the way, you're giving a lot of tips to our listeners, which I appreciate, about how to do these things at home. One would think that that means you're cutting into your business, but you want people to take good care of their pets' hygiene and fur and skin at home. Makes it easier for you to do your job at those times they come in.
It makes it easier to do my job. I also recognize that with the economic climate that we have now, mm-hmm. that a lot of people have to cut things to keep themselves afloat as a family and to remain having pets. And
right.
I would rather help somebody learn how to do their own dog and make sure their dog's taken care of than have to give up their dog to rescue.
Right, yeah, and certainly I'm sure everybody in our audience appreciates that. I appreciate that. I want to talk about something that is a combination of things. Right now we talked about different types of shampoos. And one of the types of shampoos that's out there is flea and tick shampoo. We're getting into the time of the year when ticks are going to start to rear their very ugly, and boy, they are ugly heads, and fleas will become an issue. Can you help us with any kind of tips or tricks for prevention of fleas and ticks?
Sure. I have had a lot of experience. In Arizona, ticks are the problem in the desert climate.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see a lot of fleas because fleas are moisture-loving. But I did live 2 years in California where I never saw ticks, but I saw fleas on every single dog.
Okay.
A flea and tick shampoo then became my best friend because it's a quick kill on the dog. Unfortunately, or fortunately, a lot of the chemicals that used to be in the flea and tick shampoos and dips were highly carcinogenic pesticide.
Yeah.
And so the EPA has taken almost all of them off the market. So there aren't a lot of really effective quick kill
mm-hmm.
products anymore. A lot of people say, well, I'm going to use an organic flea and tick killer. Well, a lot of these quick kill products are still a pesticide, even though they're organic.
Right.
Organic, you know, there's some very poisonous organic substances out there. And so you have to be very careful with the product. Really, right now, the best line of defense is a good offense, and your offense would be using one of the spot-on treatments every
mm-hmm.
single month and keeping your premises and the premises your dog's in as free of bugs as possible.
Yeah, so when you say spot-ons, and I'm just going to mention a few names, I'm not advocating them, you mean like Frontline or BioSpot or one of those types of products
one
that go on the shoulder blades of the dogs once a month?
Shoulder blade of the dog once a month. Again, understand that you are putting a poison on your dog.
Right.
There's just no way around it. You've got to have a poison to kill the pet.
Right, and I just want to say one thing. There's a lot of different things you could do. You could put on the spot treatments. You can use a flea and tick shampoo. Some people like the collars, the flea and tick collars. I don't, or powders. But the thing, you could pick something, but the more of those you use at one time, the more at risk you're making your dog for having some kind of reaction to all of those
and
toxic
things.
It's
very risky because they all contain chemicals or pesticides.
Right. So you really need to make sure that if you are using a collar or another product on it, and then you go to the groomer, you let them know that they're using that so that they don't use something that's going to put your dog over the edge and cause a health issue. Yeah, so make sure you communicate that. Now, if we use the spot-on product, and I know that there are different ones, some will actually repel them, some will kill them after they bite.
Very few repel them. That's kind of a fallacy. Almost all of them work through the follicles of the skin.
Mm-hmm.
And so the dog has to have it put on. It kind of gets absorbed into the skin follicles. And then when the pest gets on the animal, all of them suck blood.
Right.
And they pick up through that.
And then they die from that.
So it's a slow kill. Generally, they're off off your pet when they die. Mm-hmm. You may see them get back on because all of them have come in contact with the product.
Okay, all right. So it's not like the second you put it on your dog or your, do you use that for cats as well?
There are products for cats.
Okay, so you're not going to all of a sudden have these things jumping off. They're going to suck on it and they're kind of going to die a slow death, but that doesn't mean that they haven't laid eggs in your house. So with regard to solving a problem, it's not about just getting your dog groomed professionally or at home. It's about making sure that your premises is free of the eggs.
And that is the frustrating thing.
Yeah.
A lot of the products do stop the life cycle, so when it comes off your pet, the pet, it's not going to mature
right.
and lay eggs.
Right.
It's going to slowly, you'll see less mature bugs on your pet, and you're slowly dropping the life cycle in the premises.
Okay, so we understand that we're not going to solve the flea and tick issue right now, but help our listeners out. If you're looking at your pet, where do you look to see where do they gravitate to a certain area? In my pet, they seem to go to certain areas. Is that just something that's odd, or is that true?
It's true. I tend to find them in areas that are warmer on the dog, under the arm, in between the toes of the feet, because they walk and pick up places where the skin's a little thinner.
Okay.
A lot of times around the rectum. On ticks, you're going to just see the bugs on the dog.
Okay.
With fleas, you see what's called flea dirt trails on your dog.
Right.
They look like pepper sprinkled into the skin.
Ooh, yeah.
The pepper is actually dried blood and feces left behind by the flea, and it's flea dirt.
Okay, it's flea. Well, with ticks, though, when they're very small, they're just little black or brown things, okay, but when they actually start sucking blood, they blow up. For anybody that hasn't seen it, you're very lucky, but they blow up and they look like little, I'll call them light brown raisins for lack of anything better.
Kind of grayish brown raisins.
Grayish brown. So you'll see them look in the ear area, under the
armpit, in the feet,
around the
rectum.
And then what's the best way to remove them, Laura?
I recommend just straight removal. You can get what's called a tick removal kit. They are like little crowbars that help pry them off.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Do not step on the big gray ones because those are actually females full of eggs.
Ooh.
And if you step on them to get rid of them, it will spread eggs that can mature into life.
Okay,
tick.
So I pull mine off with tweezers.
Tweezers work really good.
I grab them by the head. It was what I've been told. Sometimes it bleeds a little bit.
Down near the skin.
Yeah, down by the skin. And then don't just like throw it away because it's still alive at that point. It'll look for another source. So what's the best way of disposing?
I either flush them down the toilet
mm-hmm.
or I have little baby food jars with rubbing alcohol in them.
Oh, rubbing
and
alcohol.
And I put them in rubbing alcohol and it kills them.
Okay. Do they dry up? No!
Well, they kind of get wrinkled like if they stay in water too long.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it is tick season. I recommend everybody start looking online and researching what's going with ticks, especially in your area. It doesn't even have to be that your pet was in a place that it picked up the eggs. If they're playing with other dogs or things like that, they could pick them up at the dog park. It's amazing the way ticks are something very important that you don't allow to become an infestation with your dog because they can actually get diseases from ticks.
Lyme disease in a lot of areas of the country you can get from ticks.
Yeah. So please do some more research. And Laura, I cannot believe how the time has flown by. I have so many more questions that I want to ask you. But first, why don't you just promise me you're going to come back another time so I can ask you more questions like, as regard to haircuts, do poodles really need to be groomed like that, or is that a personal preference? And I want to talk to you about other seasonal issues. So will you come back on to Fervently Speaking?
I would be more than happy.
Oh, yeah, really. You're just a wealth of information, and I've enjoyed this conversation. You're a good sport about something that really is a dirty business, but somebody's got to do it, right?
Somebody's got to do it.
Pet grooming.
Tell
me a little bit about your business, where you work, and what makes you guys different really quick.
I love our business. We are cage-free, which helps calm a lot of the anxiety the dogs come in. So I like having a day with 30 dogs sitting around my stool and paying attention to me because I become the spotlight there.
That's a four-legged stool, not the number two stool, by the way. Okay, so Villa La Paz, cage-free pet resort and spa, which is in Northwest Phoenix.
Currently, we are doing a franchise rollout, so you may see a Villa La Paz spa coming soon to you.
And you're going to be actually training all of the groomers that come through there to make sure that they know everything that you know and are also able to give information like you're so willing to, and if they come in for professional grooming, take care of them, let them go home looking and smelling and feeling awesome.
Well, I always say my clients are both two-legged and four-legged, and I'd like to think of them all as my friends.
Awesome. Well, Laura Russell, thank you so much. For more information on Villa La Paz, you can go to www.villalapaz.com, and you can click on grooming, and you can find Laura's picture on the Bell location, the Bell Road location. I understand you're moving in just a few weeks, so you'll be able to track her down there. Thank you so much for being on the show with us, Laura.
Thank you for having me.
And give a big hello to all of those pee dogs you have, the poodle
Lots
and the pug.
Lots of slurpy kisses sent your way, too.
Did you find out, did you remember the last two dogs' names?
No, I forgot all
about it. All right, I'll post it on our Facebook
They're
page.
All love.
Yeah, there you go. You've been listening to Fervently Speaking. We're here every second and fourth hump day. That's Wednesday on the Boomer and Babe channel of Blog Talk Radio. I am the top dog, Eileen Proctor, America's Canine Connections Coach and the voice of Pet Rescue. Reminding you, if you haven't already done so, please go hug and kiss your pet today. Take out a brush. And oh, wait, we have the names. Go for it.
Diesel and Maverick,
there you go. Diesel and Maverick, we love you. We love all the dogs, the cats, the critters out there. Please tune in again in two more weeks for another fun and fur-filled episode of Fervently Speaking. And remember the rally cry of the top dog, adoption is the best option. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Fervently Speaking with your host, Top Dog Eileen Proctor. To find out more about today's topic or to suggest one for a future show, email topdog@ferventlyspeaking.com. That's topdog@ferventlyspeaking.com. And be sure to tune in every second and fourth Wednesday of the month for another fun and fur-filled episode right here on the Boomer and the Babe Network on Blog Talk Radio. Fervently Speaking is a production of Boomer and the Babe Incorporated. Contact them at boomerandthebabe.com.